Welcome to Land Academy.
I'm Jack Butella.
I'm Jill DeWitt.
We show you how to buy real estate for half of what it's worth
and sell it on the internet really fast.
We are Jack and Jill,
and this is the Jack and Jill Show 2.
With over 15,000 completed transactions, we're the experts at acquiring property.
Of all kinds, not just land.
For half price and flipping them for way more.
All right, let's get this show started.
Jill and Jack here.
Oh, it's the Jill and Jack Show.
Yes,
now.
It is today. Welcome to our show. In this episode, Jack and I talk with MC Lobsher, who is the cash flow ninja. So here's a little bit about MC. He is a wealth architect and strategist, educator, and financial freedom fighter. He's the president and CEO of Valhalla Wealth, a financial creator and the host of the popular business and investing podcast, Cashflow Ninja. Yay! His mission is to help as many people as possible eliminate the control banks and financial institutions have over their lives by building their wealth in a variety of ways outside of Wall Street. He believes the best way to achieve this is in the information age, is by reclaiming the banking function in your own financial life through structuring an efficient cash flow management system and creating and building assets that provide multiple streams of income.
Well, we have a lot to talk about there.
Yes, we do. MC teaches actionable education to his listeners and helps his clients collapse time in their wealth plan and achieve 40 years of financial results in 10 years or less. MC challenges existing societal beliefs, systems, and misinformation around concepts such as money, saving, investing, wealth, and retirement. Thank you, MC, and welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys. Honored to be on your show.
Thank you.
Oh, great.
Thank you very much. So I you have a lot of big words in there. I want to remember where are you from and how long have you been here and what's your background?
Yeah, so I'm originally from South Africa. I came here in about 2001 to the United States. So I currently reside on the East Coast, Newtown, Pennsylvania, which is in Bucks County. But yeah, came here in 2001 with a backpack, about $500, a sense of humor and a sense of adventure. And I played in a sports league here. That's kind of how I started. My investment career started around about the same time. As you guys mentioned, I have a podcast, The Cashflow Ninja, where we talk about different asset classes and how to create income streams from them in this new skill economy, no longer a jobs one. And I am also the president and CEO of Valhalla Wealth Financial, where we help people build their wealth outside of Wall Street in alternative investments, which a couple of years ago, people would kind of look at you like you're some kind of a weirdo when you talk about that, but it's really found some traction out there, and I think a lot of people are starting to wake up. More and more people, let me say that, even though markets are at all-time high and the tides are high in the ocean, right?
Right. So you mentioned the markets. So do you use the markets in part of your financial stuff, or is it just a gauge of what you're competing with?
No, so we do it completely outside of it. We play in our own sandbox. So I think from a philosophical standpoint, we like to have control over our own lives and our own cash flow and our own money. So we position it outside of the system, utilizing actually insurance vehicles with mutual insurance companies, which that's kind of the liquidity side of it. And then we leverage some of these contracts, which is structured a very specific way, and invest in real estate syndications, real estate investments, land investments, and then also other vehicles which we have more control over. We can affect and impact, we know how to protect our downside, right, and risk management. So with the markets, unless you're a professional or a computer, because there's so much high frequency trading right now and algorithms. Yeah. It's not really set up for the person on the street or anyone, rather.
Exactly. So you just answered the question that I think all our listeners have. What's this really all about? Like, can you walk us through a regular way to make money at the eighth grade level?
Yeah. So basically, just to touch on from the system that we do, you know, we're all our greatest and number one asset. So that's the first place to invest. But after we realize we do that and we have invested in ourselves, we know exactly what we want, which is very important, right? When you're trying to go somewhere. Otherwise, well, what is it? Alice in Wonderland, which said, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there, or any road will do. But yeah, so we have to be very specific of what our goals are, our cash flow goals. We have to understand why that matters and why it's important. And then it's kind of like the cart before the horse, right? And then we also have to understand who we need to become to do that. Because if you come in, a client comes into me and they said, well, MC, I want to make $1 million a month in cash flow. We can take a look at that, but let's see what we have to work with here. And are you the person that can already develop $1 million of cash flow per month? Because that requires a certain level of financial IQ. But let's the system that we then put in place in the processes is basically, you know, we first set up the liquidity. Liquidity is extremely important and key for any investor. And we utilize that through a strategy that's known as infinite banking. Some people have referred to it too as just high cash value life insurance, which is structured on a chassis of whole life insurance, designed a very specific way. Not the one that's not the one that's found sold by most agents out there. So we kind of craft it and design it for maximum cash value. The reason that we do that is because the money inside there is guaranteed. The money inside there grows predictably. Tax-free. You also get to participate in dividends because you are a shareholder of a company as a policyholder with a mutual insurance company, and that's also a very key component to this. And what it allows you to do is borrow from your own policy, but it's a little bit different than borrowing from an IRA or a 401k or any of these other vehicles. When you actually borrow money from a mutual insurance company, you don't draw down the policy or the value of your account. It's actually a separate transaction. So to give you an example, if there's $100,000 of cash value in your policy and you borrow 90% of that, which most companies allow you to do, so $90,000, you still have $100,000 in your policy growing predictably and safely tax-free, and you get to leverage the $90,000 at 5% to then go invest in other investments that produces a 8%, 10%, 12%, or whatever percentage return you can get. So it's a great place to park your money. Wealth has to reside somewhere. I don't feel comfortable putting it in the banks at all, especially with the regulations. The Dodd-Frank Act is another podcast we can cover with all the landmines that are in there for the average person. So we feel safe having it outside of the system and the banking system, outside of Wall Street, and then having a little bit more control over it. So that's kind of how we structure the cash flow side of it, our liquidity. And then the second step is income. So we help folks to look at other investments, alternative investments that produces income for them. And then we also have a growth portion where once you've set up your income, you've achieved your income goals, and now we're building, continue to build the wealth. We look at growth strategies as well. But that's kind of it in a nutshell. It's just we're playing in a different sandbox here, not the Wall Street casinos one, right?
Yeah. So it sounds like you're taking the basic rules of investing. You know, put a bucket full of play money and knock yourself out. Use some secured money, and you're applying basic accounting principles, balance sheet, income statement, the whole thing. I have an accounting background, so it sounds like it's a new twist on saving and investing money for retirement with different vehicles, right?
Right. And this is definitely not something new. I mean, this has been done for quite a while by a lot of wealthy families. And there's two asset classes that the wealthiest families really position their assets in, which is real estate and insurance. And once you get to look at dive into the IRS code, you start to chuckle when you look at the two of them, because you're like, oh, my goodness, these guys really write the rules, because
that's right.
These are from a tax point of view. which Texas is a huge wealth destroyer. These are two of the most favorable assets. And then it's no coincidence that these are some of the strategies that are used in family offices across the country. But to your point, very basic principles. The first one is to have control over your investments and your money. This is your life. And then the second principle is we want to, Robert Kiyosaki talks about we want to, it's not how much money you make, but how much money you keep, and then how hard that money is working for you. I'd like to give that money as many jobs as possible simultaneously at the same time and really work it. And then the risk management is a big portion. You have to understand how to position yourself with risk management and manage the downside. But then also the economic efficiency, which I just touched on, the taxes. We've got a minefield ahead of us in the next 10, if 5 to 10 years, we've got a pension crisis, which is rearing its ugly head. If we just look at the federal government's balance sheet, it doesn't get any prettier with just trillions of dollars in debt and underfunded liabilities and all these things. And we kind of slowly start to see how this is going to play out. If we look at what's happening in Illinois, which has become kind of like the poster punching bag for this crisis and pending bankruptcies of a lot of cities and municipalities and so forth. But then other factors play in it too. Commissions and fees is a huge one when it comes to wealth and building your wealth. So that's very important to position yourself favorably and limit and reduce that and look at the ROI for it as well. I don't feel comfortable giving someone money and they take 1 to 2% of it for over 30 years and then hope something's there for me, right? So it just, principles that have been used over and over. So we've just looked at the blueprint, copied it, and that's what we teach our clients.
That's great. Jill and I, one of our peeves is fees.
Commissions and fees.
We have a whole show about real estate agents and why they're pretty much crooks.
I
not all of them, but some of them.
I had a guy, I got to tell you just a little side note. I had a guy I talked to yesterday. I'm hiring for my team, MC, and his resume came through, and he never put on his resume that he's a licensed realtor. And I'm like, oh, no, in our world, that sinks a ship. And I'm like, doggone it. And, well, you know what? He said, wait. He goes, I can go inactive. He's like, will that be okay? Kind of thing. It was really funny because he really wants a job.
He just picked the wrong person.
I'm like, doggone it. It was so funny. I'm like, you're not a licensed realtor, are you? And I'm like, please say no. Please say no. And he goes, is that a problem? I go, oh, no.
One of our favorite, adding to exactly what you're talking about, MC, my favorite type of income is operating income. So we have the other ones pretty well in place, and we always have. But operational income, company money from companies that we run, I'll tell you, we've got, 8 or 10 companies running right now, cash flowing well. Mm-hmm. And it's just like printing money. So do you like, let's say, some of the really large equity funds like KKR, do you get involved with that at all?
No, so it's a little bit smaller syndications that we get involved with. There are some funds that we're looking at right now. Some of my clients are very interested, for instance, in the mobile home park industry. So there are funds that actually really good operators in that space. So that's something that we look at as well. But the whole thing, and to touch upon what you guys have mentioned about the fees and commissions and so forth. The big thing too for me is price, cost, and value. I always run it through kind of that screener for me. Everything is a price. What's the true cost of it, and what's the value? If we just look at the conventional, and I like to call it the conventional kind of planning right now, which is it's a train wreck waiting to hit something. Right, the Wall Street one is what am I paying for? The price is absurdly high. If you're just basically giving your money to someone else, you don't know. There's no feedback loop mechanism, so it's going to take you 30 to 35 years to figure out if it was the right one. Because even in downturns, they're just going to tell you, just ride this one out. I know we lost 40% of your money or 50% of your money or whatever it is. But hey, that 2% that we override that we take, trust me, we're worth every cent. And then the value in the end. So you kind of have to look at look at that whole picture. I think John Bogle from the Vanguard Group, which is here in Pennsylvania, did like a study where 2/3 of your gains over 30 to 35 years could be eaten up by fees. So, yeah, I mean, when I look at that, that's almost predatory. So it's, you know, the game is rigged and it's designed for certain folks to win. And what we are talking about, what you guys are talking about, which is fantastic, is just, guys, there's other ways of doing this to rig the game in your favor.
You know, what we're seeing, too, is a lot of these the younger kids and millennials, they've had it. You know, they don't even have any experience like we do. But they're disgusted with it as much as we are. You know, they're very, very, very open to the fact exactly what you're saying. It's pretty much rigged. It's right out of 1955. Right. There's got to be a better way because of the internet.
And right.
So
you're right.
A ton of our members come to us with an open mind, which is that's all we require. If you come into this with an open mind that things need to change, there's usually a really positive outcome.
Exactly. That is exactly right.
Yeah, it's exactly what I'm seeing as well. You know, millennials had a ringside seat to seeing what their parents went through. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of households, majority of households in the United States, it wasn't pretty. You know, this whole go to school, get good grades, you know, go take on more debt to get a degree, you know, and whatever, where they don't really teach any skills. It's still shape the education system for the job economy, not a skills economy, and then buy that white picket fence and, you know, basically hand your money to someone to manage for 30 to 5 years and everything's going to be rosy and every, you know, you're going to have that, what's the movie, the Stepford Wives pictures on your walls, right?
Yeah.
It just doesn't work out that way. And for them, you know, good on them that their timing to see all of this, that this, there's a lot of holes in this holy story that's been pitched to them. So they're starting to wake up, you know, they're big in all kinds of stuff. I think if you look at where millennials are looking towards as well, there's a lot of them involved in the crypto space to understand, talking about rig games, to move out and away from the system. So they do come with an open mind. They come looking at different ways because they said, well, you know, this hasn't worked for mom and dad. This isn't going to work for me. I'm in a mountain of debt. I don't know what to do really. They're willing to look at other ways to do it. And so it's been quite something to see the development and all these open minds starting conversations.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to try out a Stepford Wife. Like, you know, so, you know, you come home from work and your slippers are there and there's
yeah,
a warm
and
meal.
I greet you with a scotch. Mm-hmm. And I'm wearing a skirt. And high heels.
This is turning me on. Go
and
on.
I have an apron on.
Uh-huh. What else?
My hair's all bouffant.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like B-52s.
Yeah.
All up there.
There we go. How's that?
you have to be wearing a smoking jacket, right?
There we go. Yeah, I hand that to Jack and with
the
slippers.
Can we just do it for like 2 days? Just see if we like it.
I don't know. MC, would your wife do that?
I could try. we have a 5-month-old baby right now that might interrupt this whole scenario. Right.
So, I don't.
You guys are married to your baby right now.
So when you get the door now, it's like, here, take them. I got to take a shower.
Yeah. That's right. That's
I remember right. those days.
I'll see you on Monday.
Here,
thanks.
It's all yours. I had this, had it all day. Here you go. You had a relaxing day at the office. Your turn.
Right. That's exactly.
Exactly. You get to have fun and talk on podcasts and have conversations. Here you go.
You got to have lunch all by yourself. I'm so jealous. I remember those days. That is awesome. So what kind of people, how do they find you and what kind of people come to you?
Yeah, it's been very, very interesting. So it's a lot of the clients that we have is professionals. So we've got quite a bit in the medical arena. So a lot of busy working professionals that we work with. And then there's also, I mean, you know, there's a place for everyone. There's very a lot of young ones. I mentioned millennials that are doing that find us through podcasts. The millennials love the podcasts. So we work with a lot of them. We do a lot of family planning. So I've had a lot of baby boomers from the boomer demographic coming over, because there's a one of the greatest transfers of wealth is about to happen as well, with a lot of boomers that still have some money left after the last 10 years are looking to not only retire, but transfer it over to the next generation. So that's kind of the legacy planning that we get involved with. And then there's also planning for, part of the legacy planning is planning for children and grandchildren and so forth. So that's one thing that we do as well. But yeah, investors, entrepreneurs, small business owners, and then also families that we work with. The podcast has been a great one. I mean, my podcast, because the idea actually started, a lot of my clients asked me, hey, you know, I've set up liquidity. I'd like to learn more about X, right? Like real estate or gold and silver or Bitcoin or whatever. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm not the expert in a lot of those fields. There are people that know a lot more about me. And my philosophy is always to partner with people that know more than me do in their respective areas. So I figured, hey, let's grab a microphone. Let's have some fun and let's interview some people that are experts in that arena and have that expertise in that asset class. And that's been fantastic because it gave my existing client base a big exposure of different ideas. And then also there's new listeners then come as the show's growing. So we're a complete virtual wealth management firm. So we operate all over the United States, and there's even Canadians, which we then partner with advisors that we know, like, and trust, and is in the same frame of mind that we do in Canada. So but to make a short answer extremely long, it's very diverse, our group of clients.
That's cool. You know, what's interesting is you touched on what I was suspecting, and we have a lot of these individuals in our group which are really smart people.
Oh, geez. Smarter than us.
Exactly. Than us. You know, and it's you don't find out until 6 months down the road that they've got 3 PhDs and they're running a pharmaceutical company. I'm
and
like,
they're just
wow.
As sick and tired of everything else like we are.
Exactly.
You know, so all those degrees and all that money doesn't change their attitude. We all have the same attitude. We're all disgusted.
Exactly. It is so interesting. So what do you think is the, you know, because you too have a wide variety of individuals that you work with. So what is one of the biggest wealth building tools that you have found in the last few years that you didn't even expect? Is there something new that you went, oh my gosh, we all need to be doing this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And
it is
before
a good question.
I get Cheerios.
I did.
Yeah. And I guess I would answer, before I get to that, the asset classes, I've mentioned that we talk about investing in ourselves, but the other one too is relationships, the second greatest asset that we have. So even if they take away, like, I can talk about real estate, which has really performed well, and syndications and the tax advantages and the passive income and so forth, especially in multifamily. But even if that's taken away, if you have yourself and that relationships, it doesn't, you know, they could take everything away from you. You can start back up again. So I think that's the first two things that you have to have in place, because I think there's some headwinds ahead. Mm-hmm. Just looking at what's out there in our environment. If you have those two things in place, you can rebuild, or you can not only thrive or survive, but also thrive. The other thing that I would mention you guys and mentioned about, wow, everybody should be doing this, is find different ways of how money can work simultaneously at the same time for you in many different places. So when you dovetail certain things, you know, like we teach people to do with the insurance and then the real estate, I mean, it's quite remarkable the many different jobs that one single dollar has. And you can, there's different asset classes to do it as well. For instance, one of the things that I researched back when I started to look at this as well is folks that were trading, I believe it's called asset-based lending, of where they basically through managing positions in the markets, can leverage that to invest in land or in real estate or in any other asset classes. The old way of doing it, when a bank, CDs at a bank used to pay like 15%, was that folks would put CDs in the bank and then basically get a loan with that as collateral to go out and purchase investment grade real estate, right? So I would say that there isn't particular one, obviously Bitcoin right now. You know, if somebody had told you about cryptocurrencies and you bought a bunch of Bitcoin at $3 a Bitcoin, you'd be smiling like a Cheshire cat right now, if they do smile at all. I would say that yourself, your relationships, and your network, and then look at for different ways of dovetailing certain asset classes to maximize the usage of every dollar.
Well, I have to say, my favorite of that answer was the first two. And you're sounding very spiritual, MC, yeah. And I really, really like that. And that's near and dear to my heart. Because you're right. You know, how many people fall down and don't get back up? But if you have the strength to fall down and get back up and do it again, you know, you can do it again. And once you figure that out. Well, yeah, it's true.
Let's just start off all being honest with ourselves in the air.
Things are going to go wrong. We are going to screw up.
That's right.
Right.
So just plan for it rather than be surprised by it. Mm-hmm. That's what I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, it's going to happen, as you mentioned. We're going to fail. And hopefully we do, because then we keep growing and learning, right? And I think once you've failed a couple of times, for me personally, I've embraced it. And I'm looking forward to the learning, right? And the other thing is, there's a mentor of mine that talked about human life value. Since I took it a little bit of a spiritual direction, but all of us have a value to the world. And once we increase our value to the world by investing in ourselves and our relationships and so forth, it doesn't matter. You know, there's a lot of doom and gloomers out there on economy and the world's going to end tomorrow and the dollar is going to crash and, you know, we're going to all live in bunkers and all that kind of stuff. But regardless of what happens, once you've established your human life value to the world and you have those relationships, goods and services will always be traded between people. There'll always be certain needs, the basic human life needs, and how they will exchange, you know, in the monetary system, and the global monetary system changes every 30 to 40 years. And we'll probably, I mean, we're due for another change in a different direction, but people still exchange money, regardless of what it is, whether it's cryptocurrency or gold and silver coins or Federal Reserve notes. And it's a medium of exchange and a representation of value. And the value that you have to the world is your real, real power inside to be able to exchange with other folks. So regardless of how you fail and fall down and lose a little bit or lose everything, once you have those things in place, I think you'll be able to get up and build it right back up again.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jill, you and I have, I don't know, 5 or 6 basic income streams mm-hmm. that we've all created. Mm-hmm. I mean, off the top of your head, without really thinking about it, which one is most profitable with the least amount of work?
Want me to say it?
Yeah, just say it.
Flipping land.
That's what I think.
I don't do it.
All right, so I have the same answer.
I come back to that.
And what's number two? Flipping houses.
Oh, yeah.
And then all these websites and these tools that we have, like Offers Owners and all that.
They require a little more work.
It's a tremendous amount of work.
Yeah.
Let's just call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
A lot of work for both of us. They're profitable as hell.
It's
as
funny.
A percentage. But the flipping land, buying a piece of property and selling it for more, whether it's land or houses right now, it's almost
and
like
don't get greedy.
I am never surprised about how much money it makes. Mm-hmm. I'm never surprised about how consistent it is. And we just put the thing in place and it just seems like it runs itself with two or three people involved
it.
And that's it.
Can you get to that point with all the, I mean, I'm sure you can, MC, with all the stuff that you coach and you teach people to do. Is there ever an autopilot situation or is it a lot? How much work do you have to put in to typically manage your portfolio the way you guys do it?
Yeah, so that's another great question. You're on fire today.
Thank you.
No idea, MC. You have no idea how true that is.
Thanks.
No, Yeah, I mean, a limited amount of time we can spend on it. So to give an example, for instance, once you've built up that cash value in your policy, for instance, that's a phone call or a form that you fill out. The money's coming in, and it's in syndications, or you know, that's I'm just using that example because there's a lot of clients that prefer to do that, and that's monthly checks that they get in the mail. They can set up a loan payback schedule on autopilot. So yeah, I mean, this is something that you could sit back once a month to manage it, look at it to see what's happening. And then there's, of course, other folks that want to be more hands-on and they're a little bit busier in what they're doing. But you can truly look at this and with a minimal amount of time, manage it and still be in control of how this work and where this is going and where this fits into your overall wealth plan.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I have a question too. I was wanting to ask, like, what do you do to relax when you, cause you have so much going on. What is relaxing to you? Is it looking, I imagine when you're relaxing, MC, you're researching something new. So what do you do?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I do like to research and read a lot. So I'm always always looking into something and reading up on something and try to learn something new from someone else. But yeah, relaxing right now too is just quality family time.
Have you heard of that word, relaxing?
Well, he's got a 5-month old baby.
I know.
This is a loaded question.
Yeah, it's
no.
I think relaxing is taken on
for his wife or anything. No. I'm not trying to throw MC under the bus or anything. Okay. No.
It's taken on a different meaning for sure with a 5-month-old. I'll tell you that, because that's relaxing and spending some quality time with them and my wife. So yeah, no, it's definitely taking on a different meaning.
Yeah.
Are you aware that in this country in the 80s there was a character called MC Hammer who filed bankruptcy?
I'm absolutely aware of that, and I usually joke and say, because my full name is Michiel Christian Bester Laucher V, and my mom looked at this and she goes, yeah, we're gonna call him MC, and that was before MC Hammer in the Pan, so I have to give her credit.
Oh, all right, okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
he was named after you then.
Yeah. He's the empty hammer with pants.
That's it.
I still see people with those pants on, by the way, now and again.
Me too. It's coming back. All that stuff's coming back.
It's
that old Madonna thing.
Yes.
It's really silly.
It is so hilarious.
Well, you're a woman. What do you think about the fashion of the 80s?
Oh, I think it's awful.
I do too. It was awful in the 70s.
Awful.
It's worse.
I think the 60s was fun. I would have done
the
60s.
I think the 90s is okay. It's got back to normal.
The 90s is okay. So yeah, the 80s, that was awful.
I think it was
cyclical, right, too? Because I think was the bell bottoms from the 60s and that kind of came back in the 90s too? So it kind of like, there's kind of this recycling cyclical thing going on with fashion, right?
Exactly.
Remember that hairstyle for women where it would just be really like all stuck in the front, stuck up like...
Oh,
like
yes.
They got hit in the forehead with a 2x4.
Yes, that was hard to do with a blow dryer and a lot of hairspray.
Right. And why?
So I know this is a question Jack's been dying to ask you. So.
Oh, here, this is a trap too.
Well, no, this is funny because so Jack's from the East Coast and we live on the West Coast now. And Jack has this conversation often with other men about the difference of East Coast women and West Coast women.
What?
So I know just what they look like.
This is so off topic.
No, I know. This is kind of funny though. So what are the women like in Pennsylvania? Are they uptight? I mean, what's it like living there? I've never lived there.
It's a trap.
No, I'm curious.
No. I would say, so I lived in Chicago for 12 years, and it's got kind of like the Midwest charm, and Pennsylvania is very, very similar to that, because a lot of people think East Coast, they think New York, or right, the big cities, so I wouldn't completely say that they're big city-esque, so I mean, I find them very, very friendly and nice, so now I'm going to be alive for a lot longer too, at home.
I love it.
Remember how during the pre-talk, MC, we talked about pleading the fifth?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Right.
You silly. You are so silly.
I was thinking about that, but that might have even gotten me in more trouble.
Oh, yeah. You guys are awesome.
I'm a big fan of the West Coast. I like the attitude you know, there's nothing wrong with the East Coast. I think the younger generation's a little bit more calmed down. They probably have, they're younger, so they have less stuff to be upset about. But
wait, where? Here?
No, it's just, there's some huge differences between the East and West Coast. I don't care that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Just think in general, people are just a little bit more calmed down. And it doesn't have to, some of the most wealthy people I've ever met live where we are right now, mm-hmm. Joe. And they're also some of the nicest, most calm people ever. And I just think that the opposite, you know, in general, on the East Coast, it seems like with wealth comes this responsibility to be, you know, somewhat of an anus.
Oh, no.
You know, it's funny. It's funny that you say that, because every country, too, is different regions. And it's kind of funny that, growing up in South Africa, it's the same thing where, so I grew up in the South in just outside of Stellenbosch, which is the closest major city is Cape Town. And then Johannesburg is kind of where the stock exchanges is. There's a lot of gold companies there, which was big drivers of the economy. So you almost kind of like Johannesburg was kind of, there's a different speed and intensity of life there than down in the South, where it's kind of more, I guess Cape Town or parts of it, it reminds me a lot of the West Coast, the very picturesque and beaches and so forth. So there's a different pace of life. So that I've definitely seen in the U.S. as well. When you compare, like, for instance, my New York City is, you know, its own planet. Yeah. But like even Chicago, and then compare it to the West Coast. Yeah. But it definitely is interesting seeing it in different countries and different regions, kind of how, the different speed of life and the quality of life.
I spent a lot of time in Chicago in my really early commercial real estate years, and I have nothing bad to say about it. I love it.
I liked it too. A little cold in February,
it's
but
cold,
I do.
Except for the weather.
My brother lived there for a while, and I got to visit him, and it was really fun.
The summers are amazing in Chicago.
Yes.
Incidentally, it's a little late to bring it up, but Jill's little brother is the master of high velocity trading.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he got in and got out.
So some of the things you touched on, that was one of the things that he got so big, is he designed a program that really took the automated trading to the next level. And that's why they did so well.
Right.
Yeah, there's some stuff. I mean, I usually joke and say there's things right now in algorithms and computer software and programs that we don't even know exist.
That makes me jealous when I think about it. Like, why didn't I write a program? It's probably like 6 lines of code.
I remember watching him. I'm like, what do you do all day? He's like, nothing. I just sit and watch. Seriously.
I'm sure Michael Lewis is going to write a book about it eventually.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, MC. Happy to have you on our show. So, MC Lobsher, am I saying that okay with my West Coast accent?
Yeah, that was great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Creator and host of the Cashflow Ninja, and this is Jack and Jill, and you are not alone in your real estate.
Join us in the next episode where I report back on how the whole Stepford Wife program went.
There we go.
Thanks, MC.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
We are Jack and Jill, and this was the Cashflow from Land show. We are the experts at acquiring property
of all kinds, not just land,
for half price, just so we can flip it for way more
and really fast. Thanks for listening. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.